We'll get sorted that. Right. Welcome to the meeting of the Plans Committee. There are a number of things I'd like to remind people of before we start with the items on the agenda. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and the sound recording will be made available on the Council's website. Under the Openness of Local Government Bodies regulations, people may film or record this meeting, and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not disrupt the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, could I ask everyone present to please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silent? We are not expecting any fire alarms this evening, so if the alarms sound, please proceed to the nearest fire exits, which is situated to the side and the rear of the meeting room. Toilets are available and these can be found through the doors at the back and to the side. And can I finally remind people that this is a public meeting, so please conduct yourselves in an appropriate manner, which I'm sure you will all do, but we don't like being shouted at. Thank you very much. I now move on to item one on the agenda, apologies. Do we have any apologies? I don't believe so.
Yes, Chair. So we've got apologies from Councillor Hamilton and Councillor Bolton's kindly subbing.
Thank you very much, Councillor Bolton. The minutes of the previous meeting, can I take those at the camera as a true record of the meeting held on the 26th of September? Please. Councillor Forrest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's just a small item under the minutes of the previous meeting, under disclosures of pecuniary and personal interest. I declared it was a personal interest, and it says that I knew Mr. Rowland, who was speaking on behalf of the applicant in a personal capacity, but retained an open mind. I suppose I'm being a bit nitpicking, but it's not really a personal capacity, it's a professional capacity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can that be noted, please? Thank you very much. We have no questions under Committee Procedure 12.8. Item 4, do we have any disclosures of pecuniary and personal interest in the agenda today? Councillor Snart.
Chair, thank you. This is item 2. I have a personal interest in bias. One of the objectors is a family member, and I will be leaving the room.
Thank you. Councillor Grimley.
Yes, thank you, Chair. This is item number 1. Professionally have worked with the chap who's speaking on behalf of the applicant on other developments. Nothing to do with this particular development. It's just through work and on a professional basis. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'm unable to stay in for item 2 as I've got a closed mind to it, so I'll be leaving the room.
Councillor Forrest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item 1, and again, Mr. Phil Rowland is speaking on behalf of the applicant. Make it clear, I do know Phil, but it's in a professional capacity. I don't go to dinner parties with him.
Thank you very much. We now move on to the business of the meeting today, and we start with the planning applications, and they commence on page 6, which gives the listing, and we move to page 8 quite swiftly, which is item 1, and I will ask the officer to lead us through it, please.
Good evening. Thank you, Chairman. Yes, the first item on the agenda relates to land at Granite Way, Mount Sorrel, and it proposes the erection of 9 dwellings and 2 commercial offices. This is the location of the site. It's on the roundabout coming into Mount Sorrel at the rear of the Waitrose store on the edge of the village. These are a few photographs of the site, which I say show this grassy area adjacent to the roundabout and at the rear of the Waitrose store and adjacent to Betty Hens's Lane. So we'll look at the layout in a moment and just discuss its relationship with the village and neighbouring properties. Yeah, this is the proposed layout. There are four blocks of dwellings proposed on the site frontage. They are either two or three bedroom dwellings. The access to the dwellings is an improved and made up roadway in along Betty Hens's Lane with car parking at the rear. And the car parking at the rear would provide two spaces for each dwelling, which meets our standards for this type of development. In addition to the dwellings, there are two relatively small offices at the northern end of the site. They will be accessed through the Waitrose car park, and there will be six spaces to serve those two units, which again meets our parking standards. This is a street scene elevation. The committee report does talk about a previous scheme on the site, which members will be aware of, that came to committee in March of this year. That was refused, and there is an appeal pending on that. The appeal has been lodged, statement has been submitted, but we don't have a decision on it yet. Whilst that's referred to in passing and is clearly material consideration because it's the planning history of the site, nevertheless, this scheme should be considered on its own merits. And what the street scene shows here is that the office buildings are tucked away at the side, close to the rear of the Waitrose store, and we've got a variety of traditionally designed buildings along the frontage and next to the roundabout that reflect really the scale, nature and design of traditional buildings elsewhere in the village, and particularly some more recent dwellings built fairly close to the site along Loughborough Road in the village. So what this application seeks to do is to introduce something in terms of its design, scale and mass, which reflects the local vernacular and at the same time is providing much needed dwellings. The dwellings on the site are the terrace blocks are two bedroomed units. The larger units here are three bedrooms, so it's meeting a local need in terms of the size of dwellings which are proposed. Here are some close-ups of the dwellings, which say are a traditional design, incorporating some features that are seen elsewhere in the village in terms of both existing development and some fairly recent development. And this is the office building, which is of a more contemporary design, which I think reflects the use of the office and reflects the design of the Waitrose store and other offices around the roundabout, which is close to the application site. The key considerations are principle of development. I think there's no doubt that Mount Sorrel is a location where development of this scale and nature is accepted, and that is set out in the committee report, so there's no concern at all about the principle of development in terms of both the dwellings and the small office units, and the policy supporting those are in the report. Design and impact on visual amenity and character of the area. The character of the area is one where, at present, you've got the rear of the Waitrose store. So the site is of no great merit. There are modern houses nearby, offices on the opposite side of the roundabout, and as is set out in the report, what the applicants have tried to achieve here and is set out in the design statement is something that reflects the scale, design and materials of the local vernacular, and the view of offices is that in this case that's what they've successfully achieved. Impact on residential amenity. The site is, the nearest neighbours are a couple of properties just here on Betty Hens's Lane. And you'll see from the layout that the distance to those properties, as is set out in the report, to the dormer bungalow here is about 15 metres, and to the side gable of the house on the road frontage is about 20 metres. And the end gable of the end terrace, the only window is a first floor bathroom window. So in terms of residential amenity for the immediate neighbours, and again there's a good distance from the front of the property to a mix of commercial and residential properties on the opposite side of the road. So residential amenity with other neighbours is deemed to be acceptable. In terms of within the site itself, all of the properties have something quite modest, but have reasonable private garden areas, a reasonable frontage with a footpath, and parking. So the distances and space around the dwellings again meets our usual standards in terms of amenity. Highways is an issue that's been picked up in comments, and the two accesses into the site. First of all, the commercial development will be served through the Waitrose car park, as is shown just there, which is considered in Highways terms to be perfectly acceptable. And the private arrangement the developer has with the with Waitrose is not a planning matter. If that exists, that exists. If that should not become available, then that's outside the that's outside our control or concern. In terms of the major part of the development, that's served off a cul-de-sac with a turning head, again designed to meet normal highway standards. And you'll see from the report, the subject to conditions, the Highway Authority have got no objection to the scheme. The final matter to consider is flood risk. The site is within flood zone 1, apart from a very narrow strip that's not being developed across the back of the site, immediately at the rear of the Waitrose store. The two things to consider in terms of flooding and drainage are, first of all, whether in terms of flood risk this is a site which is acceptable for development, in particular residential development, and secondly whether this development is going to exacerbate any existing issues in the area relating to flooding and drainage. In terms of the first point, in terms of the suitability of the site for development, as I said, the area which is being developed is within flood zone 1. The application is supported by a flood risk assessment, which has been considered by the lead flood authority, and they have no objection to the development. In terms of the drainage of the site and outfall from the site, members may be aware the site was subject to the front of the site was subject to some flooding in August of this year, and there's also a history of water running across the road into the front of number 239 on the opposite side of the road. As a result of concerns expressed by officers, which was after that was brought to the attention by members and neighbours, a revised flood risk assessment was carried out to assess the site once again in the light of recent flooding and to consider the acceptability of the site for residential development. That revised flood risk assessment was submitted. That has been considered by the local lead flood authority, and as is set out in the report, it's felt that subject to conditions that the application is acceptable and that flooding should not be created by it. One thing it does pick up, for instance, is that there's a culvert under the road that goes over to 239. As a result of this development, CCTV cameras were put down that drain, and it discovered that the capacity of the drain is adequate. The issue was silting up through poor maintenance. So it wasn't an issue of the surrounding area not being able to take the development. It was an issue of maintenance. On the issue of maintenance of drains, you've got the recommendation before you with a number of drainage conditions. I'm afraid that one condition was omitted. There was a condition requested by the local lead flood authority. If I can just read it out. So if members are minded to support the application, it's subject to the conditions which are in your report, plus an additional condition. This is the condition which the lead flood authority did request, but I apologise, was missed out of the report, the committee papers. What this condition is asking for is that once the drainage has been approved, whatever drainage system is put in place, there should be a system to ensure that its long-term maintenance is ensured. And the condition, I will read it in full, is no occupation of the development approved by this planning permission shall take place until such time as details in relation to the long-term maintenance of the surface water drainage system within the development have been submitted to and approved in writing by the local planning authority. So you see, in terms of drainage, there are three conditions in the report. This is the fourth condition. What they're all saying is, on the basis of a very detailed flood risk assessment that was submitted, is that the flood authority are satisfied the site can be adequately drained, but they still want to see some of the precise details which are set out in the three conditions in the recommendation. And the fourth condition, which I am recommending should be added if members are minded to support the scheme, is this condition to ensuring that whatever drainage system is put in, its long-term maintenance is ensured, because one of the issues that has been flagged up through research on this site by the engineers doing the work for the developers is that it wasn't a case of the local system not being able to accommodate the development. It was ensuring that the system on the site in particular is adequately maintained to ensure that the outfall from the site is acceptable. So I would suggest or recommend, in accordance with the report for members, is that planning permission should be granted subject to the conditions set out and subject to the, if members are minded to support it, the additional condition which I've just read out. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We now have three speakers. We have Mr. Rowland on behalf of the applicant, Mr. Haywood on behalf of Chairman of Mount Sorrel Parish Council, and Councillor Jane Hunt as one of the borough councillors. Before I ask Mr. Rowland to come, if you'd like to come to the... is Mr. Rowland here? Yes. Mr. Rowland, sorry, if you'd like to come and take a seat. Each speaker has 5 minutes. We do have a traffic light system. While it's green, then if it goes to amber, that means there's 1 minute left. And once it's red, you just stop wherever you are. Once you've got to 1 minute left of your speaking, you will hear this. And that means you've got 1 minute left. So is that clear, Mr. Rowland? You're happy with that? Thank you very much. So, Mr.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm Philip Rowland of Landmark Planning in Leicester. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on behalf of the applicant. The application before you is a resubmission following a previous application that was refused by this committee earlier this year on grounds of height, scale and design that would have resulted in an adverse impact on the character and appearance of the area and also the residential amenities of the occupier of number 1 Betty Hensers Lane. The application that's before you today shows the applicant has listened to your previous concerns, and the result is a design that reflects the local vernacular in terms of it now being traditional dwellings that reflect the scale and design of the area generally. The scheme is now an acceptable design solution for this sensitive site at the entrance to Mount Sorrel and minimises any impact on the residential communities of the occupiers of number 1 Betty Hensers Lane. This demonstrates how keen the applicant has been to ensure that the scheme that is now before you addresses the previous reasons for refusal, and in doing so has resulted in the application being supported by your officers with a favourable recommendation. So what are the material planning considerations? The principle of the development, well, planning law requires applications to be determined in accordance with the development plan. This proposal is relatively small scale on a vacant area of land within the designated limits for development for Mount Sorrel. The application consists of traditionally designed dwellings together with a relatively modest office building, thus overcoming the previous concerns in terms of height, scale and mass. It's considered that the scheme that's before you in terms of design and its relationship with the character and appearance of the area is acceptable, thus compliant with the relevant policies in the development plan and the relevant provisions of the MPPF. So the impact on residential amenity, the layout complies with your adopted guidance on space standards and in doing so would not result in any significant loss of amenity or privacy to any neighbouring properties in accordance with your policies in the development plan that seek to protect residential amenity. Highways, the submitter scheme fully complies with on-site car parking standards, both the residential and the commercial elements, and this has resulted in the Highway Authority not raising any objections to the proposed development. Flood risk, the accurate modelling from the Environment Agency shows the site to be within Flood Zone 1, where residential development in principle is acceptable, and both the Environment Agency and the leading local flood authority has not raised any objections to the proposed development, subject to the imposition of appropriate conditions. In this respect, the proposed development is in accordance with the development plan and the MPPF. So to conclude, the site's within the limits to develop for Mount Sorrel. The design and layout of the scheme represents an efficient use of land in a very sustainable location and complies with all the relevant policies in the development plan and advice in the NPPF. The scheme is considered to be of an appropriate scale and design, and with the careful selection of materials, should result in an attractive group of buildings of considerable merit, making a positive contribution to the character and appearance of the area for this important site at the entrance to Mount Sorrel. The impacts related to residential amenity, highway safety and flood risk have all been carefully considered and proven to be acceptable in accordance with your adopted policies in the development plan, and there are no other material planning considerations as to why this development should not be granted planning permission. I therefore urge you to follow your officer's recommendation and to grant planning permission for the proposed development. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rowland. Mr. Haywood, the chairman of Mount Sorrel Parish Council, please. You understand my explanation of the timing and everything. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to address the members of the Plans Committee this evening. I do so as the Chairman of Mount Sorrel Parish Council. The Parish Council has paid particular attention to the prospective redevelopment of this site and various proposals that have been put forward. Because it's a very important entrance to the village, indeed your officer's report describes it as a prominent corner site and gateway location, the Parish Council wish therefore to ensure that the highest possible standards of layout and design are achieved. It supports the Borough Council's own policies and supplementary guidance in this regard and welcomes the new National Design Guide. I should clarify one important point. The officer report records that the Parish Council is objecting to this application for the same reason as the previous one, and then refers to the application P181379/2 as the assumed previous scheme. In fact, the current application is essentially a repeat of an application submitted to the Borough Council in 2017. It was noted that the relevant planning history, P171264/2, that 2017 application, was the subject of criticism by the case officer at the time for reasons which overlap with the Parish Council's concerns both then and now. That application was withdrawn. Our concerns are as follows. First, design. There is unease about the office units in terms of visual appearance and associated access arrangements and no frontage landscaping to the proposed parking. We also support the design criticism expressed by the CPIE, including the relationship between the offices and the houses and the absence of chimneys. Secondly, layout. The Parish Council sustains its objection that too much development is being proposed, only a bare minimum of parking provision is included in a very cramped arrangement. Compounded by the lack of any visitor spaces, we believe that this will inevitably lead to problems in the vicinity for the existing neighbours. Thirdly, landscaping. The 2017 case officer was concerned about the loss of the existing trees on the site. We are too. The application does not include a detailed landscaping scheme which is left to a planning condition. We believe that this should not be left to a later stage, and because it's a critical part of the solution, particularly the all-important frontage, should be dealt with as an integral part of the design now. Fourthly, drainage and flooding. There's always been very strong local concern that this and recent flooding events highlighted in the media have only served to reinforce this. The officer's report, in our view, does not provide sufficient cause for comfort or reassurance, either for existing or future residents. A revised flood risk assessment has been provided, but the report to the committee reads, "The Leicestershire County Council lead local authority considers that the revised drainage and flood risk details appear technically acceptable. However, it recommends a number of planning conditions be imposed requiring subsequent approval of drainage details, including sustainable drainage features. We do not believe that this is acceptable in the case to rely on the view that details appears to be technically acceptable. In our view, it must be demonstrated and confirmed, and they are before any other commitment is made to development in this vicinity. In conclusion, given the long-standing concerns of local residents of the Parish Council, we request that a decision on this application is deferred pending the following. The submission of drainage details, which actually proved beyond any doubt the solution is technically acceptable. The submission of full hard and soft landscaping details confirm high quality design credentials. Further consideration is given to enhanced design quality and reduction of chimneys, and the ratio of dwellings to car parking provision is revisited. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Councillor Jane Hunt, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I speak this evening on behalf of myself and my fellow ward councillor, Richard Shepherd. Referring first to the current core strategy, strategic objective reference SO10, to reduce the risk to people and properties through flooding in vulnerable locations such as parts of Loughborough and the Soar and Reek Valley villages. There have been several applications on this site in the past. I spoke in objection to the last application. Within my comments, I mentioned that flooding was an issue in the area and referred to the objections from a nearby resident who had explained that there had been recent flooding lapping on the front doorstep of their property, and they were concerned that additional building works in the area would cause a deterioration of that position. On the 28th of July this year, that situation changed. Their bungalow was flooded to the depth of the top of their skirting board. Being a bungalow, they had nowhere else to go, so lost much of their furniture and belongings. I was there on the site on the day that it happened and saw the fire service pumping water from this property across the road and onto the already flooded piece of land that we are referring to tonight. The point being that it was already flooded and the manager of Waitrose was very worried about the store. So, you might say, this was once in a 100-year event. However, on the 1st of October, it happened again. Worse this time, and the water was at the height of top of wellies, I'm told. The family have not been able to return to their home since the July event. The developers have noted my concerns and reasons for the call-in and have commissioned a 162-page document on the threat of flooding in the area. However, I wonder if this report was a desk-based assessment only. The developers seem to have received a letter of objection from the owners of 239 Loughborough Road and have acted on that, referring to only one property being flooded on page 8 of their report. Actually, two bungalows and two ground floor flats in another property were flooded. I was there at the time and saw for myself the devastation that the flood caused and saw that the site was already deep in water on the bend of the site, and I would estimate near where the offices would be and possibly the nearest houses. You might say that land levels can be changed, but what then for Waitrose? The County Council have put forward conditions that they would like to be included should this application be accepted. They mentioned that they would want infiltration testing to be carried out. The specialist commissioned by the developer have already discounted this as a suitable means of draining the site. I would ask you to consider this issue in your deliberations this evening. I note that the CPRA and Parish Council also object to this application. I agree with the comments of the CPRE that the flat roofs of the commercial buildings are incongruous when compared to the proposed houses. I also wonder if the houses marked C on the plan, closest to the proposed commercial buildings, that also back onto the Waitrose building, will have a closed-in feel to the rear. The highway access to the commercial buildings is through Waitrose car park, so the County Council have not dealt with this being a private matter. I note that this route is quite narrow, with trees on one side and a fenced-off area on the other. There would seem to be some kind of equipment that is attached to Waitrose behind this fencing and is housed in this area. I would ask that this is refused, this application this evening. Thank you very much, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much. Mr. Reid, officer, would you like to come back on points that have been raised, please, before we open the discussion?
Yes, just to pick up a few of the points that have been made. I mean, in terms of flooding, clearly I hear what the parish council and the ward member are saying, and I've no doubt that's what occurred. But all I can say is that the applicants, in the light of concerns about flooding and the history of the site, as the councillor said, undertook a very detailed 160-odd page study. Whether it's all desk-based or not, I don't know, but clearly it's an extensive study that's been considered by the relevant flood authority, and the flood authority consider that development on the site is acceptable, subject to conditions. I'd agree with Councillor Hunt. It does talk about infiltration test. I think it says infiltration test, and whether the site will accept infiltration or not. I think you're right. The report that's been provided already states actually infiltration would not be acceptable on the site, so it's clear that whilst that condition is there to test whether or not infiltration would work, the report makes it clear that infiltration would not work. However, what would work is that the site would be drained through the existing public sewer systems, and subject to whatever's put on the site being maintained, as I suggested in my condition, then that is deemed to be acceptable. Just looking at the condition about drainage again, the one I read out didn't have, it needed a final line. So again, without prejudging the application, should members be minded to support it, the condition I read out before should have a final line, which is the surface water drainage system shall thereafter be maintained in accordance with the approved plan. So there should be a long-term maintenance plan submitted as part of the condition, and whatever maintenance plan is submitted and agreed thereafter in perpetuity, the drainage should be maintained in accordance with those details. So that's a line we've just added on. So apologies for any confusion with that. So as far as drainage is concerned, yes, there's clearly drainage an issue. There's a very detailed study being undertaken. That makes it clear that the existing systems will accept the development, subject to conditions as is set out in the report. Other issues in terms of design and the history of the site. I mean, yes, it's a design which is the local vernacular. No, there aren't any chimneys there, but nevertheless, it's deemed to be an acceptable contemporary take on a vernacular design. So, as the report sets out, it is a high standard of design on the corner, and I think the fact that the offices are set down to a lower level, they're subservient to the houses, so, and they reflect some of the more modern office buildings on the other side of the roundabout that you'll have seen in the photograph. So I think that in this context, having dwellings and more contemporary offices at the back of the Waitrose store is an acceptable approach to the design. The Parish Council mentioned landscaping. The scheme landscape scheme has not been submitted here, but there are two conditions on the planning permission, which are standard conditions, which require landscaping to be submitted, approved, and thereafter maintained. I mean, what I would say is that there are a few fairly young trees along the site, which do provide some softening of the appearance of the site, but to be honest, looking at them today, they're of no great merit, so if some of them can be retained, fine. If not, I'm sure that suitable replacements could be put in as part of the landscaping scheme. So nothing more to add, Chairman, apart from those comments. And just to reiterate that if members are minded to approve it, there's a slight addition to the condition. And also, I've just looked at the agenda, and there are no informatives on the agenda. Members will be aware that when we do a recommendation, there are informatives which support and complement the conditions, just to give some explanatory notes to the applicant. So again, if members are minded to support the application, I'd ask that the authorities delegated to officers to apply our normal informatives on the decision. If members look at some of the other recommendations on the agenda this evening, they see the sort of notes that are added to them. So apologies, those informatives don't appear, but again, should the application be supported, I'm asking that officers are given powers to apply our normal informative notes to the applicant.
Thank you very much. We now move on to open the discussion. Councillor Tassel.
Gosh, I didn't think I was the first. Could the officers actually clarify? Will we have the opportunity to look at the landscaping as a committee? Is this an outline planning permission only, with a return for the detailed planning so that we can have a look at the proper design of the houses, please?
Just to be clear, first of all, this is an application for full planning permission. So what is before members with the design and details of the dwellings are the full details. So it's a full application. It's not an outline application. In terms of landscaping, it's perfectly normal that a landscaping condition is applied to a scheme, and that then is considered in due course by officers and under delegated powers. So discharge of conditions, which that would be, is not something which comes to the plans committee. I mean, I think what members need to be assured of is, looking at the layout, is it something where there's sufficient space to provide some amenity, planting, etc. And again, looking at the site today, there are a few quite small trees around the edge of the site. Some of them could be retained, or other ones planted in their stead. And there is clearly scope for landscaping, but we don't have those details yet. But I'm confident that there is sufficient space and scope for a landscaping scheme to come in that would enhance the site and would also satisfy our normal requirements. I mean, what I also say is that whilst we do want landscaping on the site to soften it and improve the appearance, this is a fairly urban approach. So whilst it is a gateway into the village, it does provide the scope for some landscaping which would enhance the appearance of the site, and I'm confident there is space to do that.
Can we put on a condition then with the landscaping that we have British trees, please?
I believe now that is one of.
If members of mine support it, I think we would be looking for native species, but certainly I can make a note of that and give members an assurance, and the applicant's agent is also in the room today, that should this be approved, then that's something we'd certainly be looking for, because it would be appropriate in that location.
Councillor Forrest.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have one or two points that I'd like clarification on. I'll try and go through them as quickly as possible. I begin on page 16, and I note that as far as the office buildings are concerned, access to these buildings will be through the Waitrose site. I have my doubts about the practicalities of this, but I don't believe that is a matter for this planning committee to comment on. But I do believe we are entitled to comment on the situation with Betty Hens's Lane, which at present is... I believe it says here on page 16 the lane is an adopted and classified road which also serves as a public footpath. Is it really an adopted road? And once this development goes ahead, can we expect it to be raised to County Council adoptable standards, please? Further down the page, I have to say I share the worries highlighted by Councillor Hunt about the degree of flooding in this area. And under flood risk, the three paragraphs at the bottom of page 16, there is some... The County Council seem to contradict themselves, because they start out by saying the FRA concludes that with appropriate mitigation, the development will not create any flood risk issues to the wider area. However, in the next paragraph, the LLFA considers that the revised drainage and flood risk details appear technically acceptable. I am not reassured by this and would like some... And I know that Mr. Reid has read out to us the fourth condition regarding drainage of this site. But if, like me, you have driven through Corn, Barrow and Mount Sorrel in the last 2 weeks, where the flooding has been extremely disruptive, I think that you might also share my reservations. And then if I might turn finally to page 18. Again, I share Councillor Tassel's disquiet about the landscaping scheme, and as well as native trees, I would also like to put in a bid that we don't go for the usual dark green planting scheme, which leads to overgrown and unkempt shrubbery that nobody can be prepared to maintain properly. If we are going to accept this recommendation, I would like the landscaping scheme to be imaginative and include native trees and other more interesting plants, not just, as I say, the usual dark green planting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor. Councillor Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think some of the points have already been made, but I'd just like to mute my slight concerns. I appreciate that it does tick the boxes in regards to the amount of parking on the site, but I do have some reservations that there's no visitor parking and that it will cause issues in the surrounding area. I also have big reservations over the flood element, in the fact that if it currently floods and has done twice in the last 12 months, and that's bare land, if you then pave over that land, even with a technically acceptable drainage system, you're forcing a lot of water down a drainage system that won't cope with it, and it's just going to exasperate the problems in the area. So I do have some reservations about this.
Thank you very much. It's Councillor Tillotson.
Thank you, Chair. I do share some of the concerns that have already been raised, but if we were to support this application, can we impose an extra condition that if the applicant is not able to secure access to the office part of the development from Waitrose, that they cannot proceed with that part of the application? Is that possible for us to impose that condition?
Oh, yes, if you'd like to come back on the...
I think the difficulty is that the access to that is over private land rather than directly from the highway, so that in effect we're ransoming the developers by imposing such a condition. I mean, I guess you could put a condition on the I'm just checking the conditions. I'm sure there are conditions relating to parking that talks about the conditions being... Yeah, what the site does talk about is condition 8 talks about access, turning and parking facilities being provided in accordance with the drawing which members have got in front of them, and those sites being maintained in perpetuity. So the parking spaces should be maintained in perpetuity, but we couldn't insist that any private arrangement between the landowners was provided in perpetuity. All we can insist on is what's within the application site is provided in perpetuity.
My concern then is that should Waitrose refuse to allow access through their car park, then we'd have an office development with no access to it. So I've got real concerns about that we could allow them to build it, but then you wouldn't be able to access it if Waitrose were to refuse. So, okay.
Well, I have nothing further to add, I'm afraid. No, it's a private matter.
I just pick that up. I mean, we're being told that there is a legal right of access. We've had no evidence to say that there is no legal right of access, so we have to base it on the information in front of us. But in terms of having that proven, it's that it's private legal, it's private legal issue.
Councillor Snart.
Madam Chairman, thank you. Through you, I'd like to ask a few questions to the officers.
It was picked up by one of the speakers about P17-12642-2017, which was withdrawn, was similar to this application. Could you just tell us why it was withdrawn, and was it similar, and is it any relevance to what we're talking about tonight?
I mean, clearly, as is set out in the report, the planning history of the site is relevant to consideration. However, what I would say is I don't know why the application was withdrawn, and I don't know the precise details of the layout that predates my time with the authority. So all I can say is the determined applications on this site, which is where the planning authority has made a decision, is the scheme which is the subject of the refusal, which has been mentioned, and the current scheme. And even if that scheme in 2017 was the same or similar to this, that was at a different time and a different environment when the planning history didn't include the recent refusal for the flat. So it's at a different time. But to be honest, I don't know precisely what that 2017 application looked like, nor do I know why it was withdrawn.
Madam Chairman, may I come back? I'm just interested in the design. If you look at it, the two and a half storey have been put on the end next to the actual offices. Wouldn't it not have, in my view, design is about putting it in shape, and wouldn't they be better in the middle with it running down to those offices? It looks just out of kilter, really, in some ways.
In terms of design, the taller buildings are at that end to sort of step down as you approach the village. They're the buildings which are closer to the roundabout, which is a fairly large scale. And I think the office buildings are a fairly neutral backdrop to the site. It's the sort of articulation of the houses on the roundabout that's the key feature as you approach the village. So the idea is they're the gateway into the village, and the office building is a fairly neutral backdrop to that. And the reason they drop down as you go into the village is that the sort of smaller terraced houses then have an acceptable relationship with Betty Hens's Lane, the Dormer Bungalow, and the houses as you go along Loughborough Road. So that's the reason why it steps down as you go into the village. And those taller buildings on the roundabout were the feature entrance into the village, with the offices really as a fairly neutral backdrop.
Only two to go. The actual page 15, I think it is, it talks about there where the only window is the bathroom window, which is likely to be obscure glazed. I know it doesn't meet the... If it doesn't meet the actual distances. Can we put that as a condition, that it is obscure glazed window? Please.
It's something that you could have as a condition. My only concern is that, as the report sets out, they are generous distances that meet our standards in terms of the gable. There is about 20 metres to the gable of the house on the corner there, and about 15 metres is sort of an angle across to number one Betty Hens's Lane. And I think, you know, a single modest window in that elevation, which is almost certainly likely to be obscure glazed, and frankly, even if it wasn't, I can't see that looking over a road towards the fronts of properties is going to cause any major issues in terms of residential amenity.
And the final one, if I may, Madam Chairman, picking up the bit about the parking for the offices, I'm not concerned really about whether they get the agreement with Waitrose. What I'm interested in is, if it falls through, where are those actual parking going to be for the offices? And I would have thought we could put a condition in that the vehicles from those offices cannot park in the actual area that we're talking about. So I would have thought that there's something there. It is a real concern to me in terms of what, if something falls flat in a private agreement, where are they? Probably officers can tell me where they're going to actually park, on the road, or will they be inside the site itself? So I think there is a way that we can put some condition on there that says that if this does fall through, this agreement, that they cannot park within the actual site itself.
I'll ask the officers that. I'm not sure that there's any access from the residential site to the office block, so that is something we could ask about.
Just to say that, I mean, we've already got condition 8 that talks about development can't be occupied until the parking is provided. So whilst we can't ensure in perpetuity that the access will always be there, the car parking has always got to be provided on the site for both the flats and the dwellings. However, it would be unreasonable to impose a condition that related to another landowner that parking should be provided as a fallback position. That would be unreasonable. What they've done is they've put forward a planning application that meets our parking standards with an access where there's no evidence to the contrary, providing access to the offices. And I think we've got to accept that.
I'm not happy with that, Madam Chairman, but I really think we ought to have some way to say that to get to the offices, you've got to go through the Waitrose Way and not actually have access through the actual site itself. And I think we can do that.
Just one to labour the point. Clearly, as part of this scheme, Waitrose or other agents would have been notified. And I'm fairly sure that if there was they would have seen the plans. If there was something there which, as landowners or neighbours, they felt was untenable, they would have raised an objection or flagged that up with us. I think in the absence of any objection to the private arrangement, we only have an assurance from the applicants that they have that arrangement. It's unreasonable for us to put conditions on for parking outside the application site.
Can I also just point out that the parking areas and the manoeuvring space within the residential section will obviously be allocated to the house and it will be, you know, associated with them. So, again, then if cars are going in and parking, they're parking on private land, and so that would be, again, a private issue between what will be the new owners, which will be associated with the house owners.
Councillor Lowe.
Grimley.
Oh, sorry, if I may, I missed out Councillor Grimley, who was before you, Councillor Lowe. Sorry.
That's okay. I'm picking at listening to the issues about the flooding and whether or not that's been sorted out with the various conditions that are put in. So that's something. I think the appearance of development is generally fine. There's a lot of comments from the members here on the landscaping scheme, which are just picking at the condition on that. It talks about within 1 month of commencement of works on site. Given that there are other conditions that need to be discharged before the works commence on site, such as drainage, I don't think it'd be unreasonable to make that as a pre-commencement condition to be discharged before works do commence on site on that one. I can't see it would give any delays to the applicant on that. So generally, I think I'd like to on this propose officer's recommendation with that variation of condition and the other conditions that the officers have put in.
I'd second that.
It does include the extra condition the officers read out. And also, I'd like to say just amend condition number 4, that's put in, that the details of the landscaping are agreed before commencement on site.
And also, does that include the delegation to allow us to put the informatives on as well that we mentioned?
Yeah, if you're happy, Mark.
Okay. I was just explaining to the Chair that by making it a pre-commencement condition, it will obviously have to be agreed because legislation now requires it to be agreed with the applicant or their agent. We can't just impose it without that agreement. So we can't do that tonight. Obviously, you can propose it, but if they object, we will have to...
In the room, could they agree it now? Might be possible.
You've heard the question, Mr. Rowland. Can I ask you to come to give your view and whether... And it would... if whatever the decision is, it would if it was agreeable, we'd have to have it confirmed in writing, as I'm sure you understand. Thank you.
I don't see that as being a problem at all. If that's the way that the member wished that condition to be worded, and I don't see that there's any opposition that I want to add to that.
Thank you very much. Everybody got a note of that? Right, Mr. Lowe, did you want to add anything to your...
I quite like the application. I think it's a lot better than what we turned down last time. And that would have been an eyesore. The only concern I had was flooding. I think flooding in the area is a major problem. But as the Environmental Agency didn't make any comment, we can't really turn it down on flooding. So therefore, that's why I seconded the proposal. And that's all I needed to say, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I just want to pick up... following Councillor Lowe's comments as well. I think it's important for members to point it out, it's material, that members didn't refuse the previous application on flood risk grounds. And you'd have to, if you were going down that route, you'd have to explain why you were this time and why you wouldn't be acting unreasonably when you didn't last time and now all of a sudden you're introducing that as an issue. So just to put that out there.
Just getting a bit of clarification to help you make your decision.
Yeah, just to clarify... the appeal on the site that I just mentioned, that whilst all the statements have been exchanged and there's nothing else for ourselves or the applicants to do on that, the final decision has still not been made by the inspector, but it's due any day. But it is still outstanding, so that's undetermined, and you know that will happen independently of your decision tonight.
Thank you. Councillor Ransom.
Sorry, Madam Chair, for coming in at such a late moment. I'm getting a little bit concerned. We are waiting for an appeal answer, which we haven't got. If we are minded tonight to actually pass this recommendation of officers, it will go through. And what happens if the appeal goes through and the appeal is upheld for the applicant? That means there's going to be two sets of planning applications on that site. In that case, I would actually like to, and I know my colleagues are going to take a really deep breath here, I would like to defer this until we get, I'm voicing my opinion, I would like to defer this until we get the results of the first application.
Thank you.
You have to determine all applications on their own merits. The previous application was a separate one, albeit material, and you did make it at Plans Committee, hence why this one is in front of you. The decision of... you have to make your judgment based on what is in front of you. If the inspector is minded to allow that appeal, you are correct, they will be in effect, and you allow this one tonight, obviously. don't want to make an assumption, but if that is the case, then there will be two permissions, and they will both be valid, so the developer could choose whichever one they wanted to build out. Obviously, if you refuse it tonight, that's not going to affect the appeal decision, and the inspector will still consider that, and he could allow it. So that is something that is separate.
Thank you very much, members of the committee. I think we've had a very full and frank and open discussion, and I've seen no more indication that there are questions or anything. So we have had a proposal to approve this application subject to the extra condition, and which would be condition 16, as read out by the officer, and also subject to the amendment to condition 4, which has been agreed by the representative here. And to delegate, and also under the conditions, to delegate to the officers for the informatives to be attached to the conditions, should this be passed. Could I see a show of hands, please, for approval? Could I see those against? Abstain? I'm abstaining.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Thank you, Chair. That's
very
clear.
Sorry, I was waving my hands around, but I'm hovering. No, I'm abstaining. Okay. Yes, please.
Okay, just to record the vote for the tape, it is 7 voting for the proposition, 5 against, and 1 abstention.
Indeed. I don't know whether people, anyone wants to leave. At the moment, we'll take a couple of minutes to clear the people who would like to leave, and before we move on to the second item, their declarations of interest. Bring you all back to attention, please. Thank you. We're now moving on to the second item, which is starts on page 22 of your agenda pack, and this is for 275 Bradgate Road, Anstey. Excuse me. I'm sorry. We have started again. As I was saying, we're now moving to item 2, which is on page 22 of your agenda, and it's for 275 Bradgate Road, Anstey. If I now pass to Mr. Marshall. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, so item 2, page 22 of your report. We're at 275 Bradgate Road, Anstey. The application seeks full planning permission for the erection of a front porch with single-storey and two-storey extension to the rear and side. The application site is within the defined limits of Anstey, fronting the northern side of Bradgate Road, within an area that feels rural in character due to its location, overlooking open countryside to the front. Public footpath runs across open land to the rear of the site, which you can see on the site location plan here. The aerial photograph shows the area in more detail and the relationship with the nearest neighbour properties. This section of Bradgate Road contains 5 terrace rows, known locally as the 20 Row. The application site is 275, outlined in red here, with 273 to the southeast and 277, which is detached to the west. Each row, as I was saying, consists of 4 properties that were constructed in the late 1920s in the same form and style. All properties within the row retain a similar appearance to the front elevations with varying styles of fenestration and other minor alterations. The application site is at the end of the terrace, therefore there's a hipped roof and space to the side with garaging to the rear. Turning to the rear of the property, which is currently unaltered compared with both the neighbouring properties, which feature single-storey rear extensions, so this side at 273, on the other side at 277. So the site plan shows the roof form and footprint of the proposed extensions. So we have the porch at the front here. We have a single-storey element at the back here with a hipped roof, and then the two-storey element again with a hipped roof set down below the existing roof line of the existing property. It also shows the relationship with the neighbouring extensions. So the single-storey element here would project approximately 1.5 metres beyond the rear elevation of the single-storey extension of 273. And the first floor addition will extend approximately 3.5 metres beyond the first floor rear elevation of 273. So these are the existing front and rear elevations. So the existing along the top with the proposed along the bottom. The porch to the front is in a fairly traditional, simple style, appropriate to the character appearance of the area. And you can see also the projecting element beyond the rear to the side. And then the rear, obviously the changes are slightly more significant with the hipped lean-to roof to the single-storey element with large areas of glazing and roof lights. And then again, obviously the first floor element set down to the first floor. So the side elevations, so northwest as seen from the west at 277 Bradgate Road, which shows the height of the proposal and the extent to which it would extend beyond the rear elevation. So this is the view from 277 on that western side. And then this shows a section through the adjoining property at 273. So the grey area is essentially a section through that property, so you can see the extent to which the porch would extend beyond the front, and then again, obviously, you can see the relationship at first and ground floor level in terms of the proposed extension and the neighbouring property. These are the floor plans, so just show you what is proposed internally. So it would be a larger kitchen living area to the ground floor. The plan shows the 45-degree line drawn from the centre line of the neighbouring property's window. So there is not a breach at ground floor in terms of the 45-degree line. And therefore, it's not considered that there would be an unacceptable impact in terms of loss of light. And then at first floor, again, it would be an additional bedroom, an ensuite bathroom. And again, the 45-degree line drawn from the nearest bedroom window. The members that were on the site visit today would have seen the small window adjacent to the boundary, which is a small bathroom window, so therefore not a habitable room. So in terms of the key considerations, these are set out on page 26 to 29 of the report. But in summary, it's considered that the principle of extending an existing residential property in this location is acceptable, subject to other material considerations. In terms of the impact on the character and appearance of the area, the proposal would be located to the rear of the property, with a small section of the single-storey element projecting beyond the side elevation and seen from within the street scene. The two-storey rear element is contained beyond the rear, and views would be limited between 275 and 277 Bradgate Road. The proposed porch is a modest addition, entirely appropriate for the character of the area, of which there are other examples elsewhere within Bradgate Road on similar style properties. It is not considered that the proposal would cause harm to the Bradgate Road street scene. The proposal has also been considered in terms of views from the public rights of way to the rear. Given the 90 metres distance and the design of the extension being subordinate to the existing dwelling, it is not considered that the rear extension would be harmful from other viewpoints in the surrounding countryside. The impact on the amenity of neighbouring properties has been carefully considered and is set out on page 27 of the report. Objections received have also been considered. However, the proposal is considered to accord with policies CS2 and EV1 and the house extensions SPG, and any impacts are not so significant to justify a refusal of planning permission in this case. It is also considered that there would be no harm to the safe operation of the highway. The application is therefore recommended for approval as set out on page 29 and 30 of the report. Before I conclude, I just want to pick up the extras report in response to a neighbour's request that that officers view the application site from their side. We did view the property from number 273 Bradgate Road this afternoon. The neighbour did also request that we view it from 277 Bradgate Road, but we did not view it from 277 Bradgate Road. The neighbours at 277 haven't objected to the proposal, and that wasn't a request specifically put forward by them, so we did not do that today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have a few speakers here, and we have Mr. Haddon on behalf of Ms. Weaver. We have the applicant's agent and the applicant, Ms. Rebecca Seymour, and we have the local councillor, Councillor Taylor. Mr. Haddon, if I could ask you to come to the table. Mr. Haddon, just to remind you again of the timing we have, the traffic light system, green, you're fine, amber, you've got 1 minute left, and red, please stop, and the fact that I will sound a buzzer when you've only got 1 minute left. So when you're ready, please stop. Thank you.
On behalf of the neighbours, we are making our objections to the application based on relevant points that arise from the core strategy, policies and national framework set out and used to determine build within this area. CS2 looks at design where it says that development should respect and enhance the character of the area and protect the amenities of the people who live there. Policy EV1 references design that respects and enhances the local environment, referring to scale and mass that is compatible with the locality. And most importantly, Policy 817 states that to gain approval, an extension must meet certain criteria on its scale and mass, and not prove detrimental to the amenities of occupiers of nearby properties by reason of overshadowing, dominance, or loss of privacy or light. General background aims to make sure that any extension is in keeping with the surrounding area and will minimise any adverse effect. An extension of this mass and scale will surely maximise the dominating impact. National framework refers to right place, right time and housing for present needs, which encompasses social well-being. Here we have an extension which even the applicants agreed that they would not like to live next to. The council says that it hopes that in all cases householders will take account of this advice to promote good neighbourly relations. In the planning officer report, a lot of emphasis is placed on the objective of good design, which is a noble cause, but this is mainly a back garden extension and there is more to consider than now how nice it looks. The planning officer has submitted photographs that clearly show the relatively small amount of sunlight that, at present, manages to reach the driveway of 277. As evidenced by the shadow line in the photographs, this extension would almost certainly cover and block out any morning sunlight in the future. An extension of this size adds a whole new meaning to overlooking your neighbour's garden, and by its very nature will increase the loss of privacy. Looking out and across will become looking down and into. It is concluded that the size and position of the proposed extension is within proportion, yet the intention is for a huge increase in footprint. To achieve this, there would be an extended brick wall starting just 9 inches from the neighbour's bathroom window and passing right down against the kitchen window to the very limit of the 45-degree habitable window rule. And possibly one, possibly two steps higher than the plan suggests in elevation. This extension has the feel of this is what we want and this is what we're having, so you will have to live with it. And this is exactly the case, as the applicants would live in and enjoy it, but the neighbours would have to live with and endure it. A daily reminder that no matter how beautiful an extension, when overbearingly large, this is wholly inappropriate in the wrong place. We note that the design and access statement deviates from its intended aim in an effort to sell the scheme, with unnecessary and irrelevant text to try to justify the fact that this is an attempt to convert 275 into an executive-type property on the site of a terraced house with the resulting excess of size and scale. An overly large extension such as this will have its place, but on the backside of an end terrace, it surely creates a massing of the property that is the epitome of overdevelopment of what is, after all, a modest three-bed terrace family home. In conclusion, the planning officer acknowledges that this is indeed, and I quote, a large extension with an impact. And yes, it will, without doubt, impact on the locality and be detrimental to the amenities and well-being of the occupiers of the neighbouring properties. May I, in the strongest possible terms, ask you to reject this application. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms Seymour, when you're ready, please. Again, you understand the timing. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Unfortunately, our architect hasn't been able to attend today as she's recently had a baby, so I am standing in for her. I'm not going to cover what is in the report provided by Jennifer John or the design and access statement provided by our architect. You've all read them, and both documents are extremely thorough and written by professionals. We are novices in this process, and this is the first time we've applied for planning permission of any kind. What I'm going to do is give you a brief overview of how we feel as homeowners and applicants and why we've decided to apply. The main reason for extending our home is to create a four-bedroom house and provide our family with more space to live. We have two children, Willow, who's 8, and Hunter, who's 6, who both go to the local primary school and have lived in this house all their lives. We have no wish to move house or areas. We're settled in the community and have the land to expand into it. The fourth bedroom is important to us, as neither myself or my husband have family who live in the area. So it's important to provide a spare room for them to be able to visit. Currently, when they do, our daughter sleeps on an airbed on the floor in our room. As they get older, we would like both our children to have their own space without the need to move when family visit. The proposed extension will also provide space for a study, for homework and book storage, which we currently lack. It would also provide a utility room, as we currently have to go outside to put our washing in the washing machine, which is in the brick outhouse. The downstairs changes will also give us some badly needed storage space for the kitchen equipment, coats, shoes and toys. We were burgled at the end of 2017 and we've been looking to fortify the rear of our property, which we think our extension will help with. We feel the proposed extension will allow us to create the house we've always wanted. There are a couple of things we wanted to comment on, which have been raised by our neighbours. But firstly, I want to say when we started this process, we did not intend to upset anyone or stop our neighbours from enjoying their homes. We have taken an active role in the community of the street, so much so that we hosted the Jubilee celebration in our property and was attended by most of the row. We would like to reassure our neighbours that the purpose is to extend our home and not for financial gain. Our intention is to continue to live in our home for many years to come. We have thought long and hard about the design of the extension, both internally and externally, as we know how important maintaining the look of and feel of the 20 row is to our neighbours. So the external design, we believe, should have no negative impact on this. We used a very skilled professional architect to ensure our requirements fell within the local policy and regulations and showed courtesy to the surroundings. She even lives on Bradgate Road herself. We have made significant investment of money and time so far to ensure a high standard of design whilst developing and modernising our home. I want to make one point about the parking available to the property. Even though the area to the side of the property is not recognised as an adequate parking space, we have and continue to use it regularly for this purpose and rarely, if ever, have the requirement to park on the highway. In summary, even though this has been a long and somewhat upsetting process, as we've read the objections, we want to provide adequate space for our growing family whilst keeping the design within the policy of the council. And we hope that you can see, with the support of the extensive report by Jennifer John, it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Taylor. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I ask for this application to come before Plans Committee due to the location and the very large size of the extension. The 20R on Bradgate Road are traditional terraced properties at the edge of the village and back onto Bradgate Park. In my opinion, this extension is not in keeping with the area or the street scene. It will be very dominant and overbearing on neighbours' properties. Policy CS2 says that development should respect and enhance the character of the area, and this proposed extension is the complete opposite. This extension is nearly doubling the size of the original property. The impact on neighbouring properties will be very detrimental to their enjoyment of their homes. Over the years, properties on the 20 row have had small additions to the front elevations to include porches and pitched roofs added to bay windows, but nothing like the size of this proposed porch extension and two-storey side extension. Many properties have also been extended to the rear, but again, nothing like the size of this proposed extension. The National Planning Practice Guidance reinforces and provides additional guidance on the policy requirements of the framework and provides extensive guidance on design and other planning objectives that can be achieved through getting good design. This includes a consideration of local character, landscaping setting, effective use of natural resources, and cohesive and vibrant neighbourhoods. This proposed development does not meet any of that guidance. There have been 11 letters of objections, which is unusual for a private household extension, which highlights the concerns that residents have in the area over the proposal. The objections include extensive size, scale and massing, overdevelopment of the plot, very large increase in floor space, impact on neighbouring amenity, dominating overbearing impact, overshadowing loss of light, loss of privacy, loss of view and outlook, impact on character of the air in the street scene, and a detrimental effect on neighbouring properties and affect the enjoyment of their homes by the overbearing structure. Policy TR18 requires new development to provide off-street parking for vehicles and promotes standards that require a minimum of 3 parking spaces for a 4 or more bedroom dwelling. This proposal does not provide the suggested number of parking spaces for this proposed extension. This will encourage further on-street parking. This location is just inside the 30-mile-an-hour limit from a 40-mile-an-hour limit, and vehicles regularly travel over the 30 miles per hour, and the police are currently monitoring speeding traffic in this area. I'm very concerned about the impact of natural light with this proposal, and we must not underestimate the value of natural light, which can be affected if extensions are large and close to existing windows. This extension proposes a continuous brick wall that will completely overshadow the neighbouring property and create a situation that results in the occupants of 273 Bradgate Road having to turn on the bathroom light every time the bathroom is used. Bathroom is also one of the most used rooms within a property during the course of the day. I also note that in the proposed extension, the window in the original bathroom will be lost. There will be no window proposed for the new bathroom, and the downstairs toilet will also have no window. Within this proposed extension, there will be 3 bathrooms where there is no natural light and artificial light will have to be used on all occasions. When Chelmsford Council met on the 24th of June this year, they agreed a climate motion that works through its existing climate change strategy to enhance its existing carbon management plan and green impact policies and support new ones. This council agrees it can only operate within its own scope of control and influence, and that this council will aim to achieve carbon neutrality from its own operations by 2030, and they requested officers to undertake a detailed plan of action and report back to the Carbon Management Board. I think this planning committee needs to take this climate strategy seriously and encourage planning applications to look at reducing their carbon footprint, not encouraging people to use artificial lights and certainly not forcing neighbouring properties to use more electricity due to the design of the extension next door to them. This extension goes against all the national push to reduce our effect on the planet. I respectfully ask the Planning Committee to refuse this application. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much. Would the officers like to come back on some of the points raised, please, by the Speaker?
Thank you, Chair. Just come back on a couple of points raised by Councillor Taylor. She mentioned there was a two-storey side extension. That isn't the case. The only part of the proposed that extends beyond the side elevation is this single-storey element here. She also referred to minimum parking standards, which, again, those are technically correct. We have policy TR18 of the Safe Local Plan. They are maximum parking standards, so they are the starting point. They're not minimum parking standards. And in terms of loss of light, again, I think I would just... I didn't necessarily pick up during my presentation, but if members look at the orientation, the neighbouring property is to the south, the southeast. So the sun, for the majority of the time, is to the front of the property, and obviously sets in the west, and obviously rises in the east. So for that reason, again, it's not considered that would be a substantial loss of light to the neighbouring property. Thank you.
Thank you. I am now opening it up to discussion, and nobody wants to talk to me at the moment. Mr. Grimley.
It was just a quick one. The last speaker, the local councillor, talked about the council's adopted carbon management plan. How does that sort of sit in the planning decision making process?
There is no planning policy at the moment. We have policy CS16, which obviously requires us to consider the effects of development on climate change. But in terms of the very specific examples that were raised by Councillor Taylor and obviously other objectors, I don't think we would have grounds to refuse the application on that basis.
Councillor Tassel.
Well, having viewed the extension from the next door neighbour, I just felt that it was rather over dominant. Other properties along this row of, I'll call them cottages, or villas, I've had extensions put on, but they've all been lower storey. This is going to be bigger, it's going to be higher, and I'm really concerned at the height, at the wall that's going to go absolutely next door to, is it 277's bathroom window? I just think it's just over-dominant. The fact that it comes out, it's going out far longer, further down the garden than the others. I just think it's going to over-dominate the gardens and everything.
Hello.
Thank you, Chair. Can I just ask the officers, if I may, Chair, how much of this could be built through building regs? I know you can't go up two-storey, but how much could it be built?
The porch is, if it's basically 40 centimetres too tall to be permitted development. So if that was reduced by 40 centimetres, that wouldn't need planning permission. In terms of this two-storey, obviously, as you said, that would not be permitted development. Currently, 70-detached or attached properties can extend 3 metres beyond the rear without any planning permission or involvement whatsoever. You can go up to 6 metres subject to a prior approval application.
I think we're struggling here to... it's a big extension. It's a massive extension. It is a big extension, Chair. It's a very large extension. But I quite like it, Chair. I apologise to the speakers that are objecting to it, but I'm going to propose officers' recommendation.
I'll second that.
Mr. Campbell.
Just to pick up, I don't think we quite answered Councillor Lowe's question when we said it could go under prior notification up to 6 metres. Obviously, we didn't tell you it's 5.5 metres the single storey extension extends out. So you couldn't go two storey, but you could go actually slightly longer in single storey.
Thank you, Chair. Well, I'd just like to say it is a big extension, but I mean, the cost of moving these days, I mean, if the lady had to move into the countryside, she's saving a carbon footprint by staying where she is and extending there. So, I mean, I'd sooner stay there and extend than have to use some of our lovely countryside up and build on. Thank you.
Mr. Grimley.
Thank you. Another point I picked up from the one of the speakers, he mentioned that the development goes in terms of the light. It is the limit of the 45 degree rule. So we're not actually exceeding that 45 degree rule. So it is within our sort of guidelines on that sort of basis. So I just wanted to mention that.
Anybody else? No? Well, we bring the discussion to a closure. So I have we have a proposal to accept officers' recommendation, which would include the conditions as laid out, and it's been seconded as well. So could I see a show of hands in support, please? Any against? Abstentions? There's two of us. Thank you.
To record the vote, that was 9-4 in favour of officer's recommendation and 2 abstentions.
Thank you very much. I don't know whether if you could ask the 2 councillors to come back, and also if anybody wants to stay for the rest of the meeting, please do. But otherwise, we'll give you a few seconds to leave the building. And whilst that's happening, a 5-minute comfort break. We're now moving on to item 3 on your agenda, which starts on page 32 from Ginsall Tennis Club. If I can pass to the officer to present it, please.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, as said, item 3, page 32 of the report. We go to Ginsall Tennis Club, Gorse Hill, Anstey. Full plan admission is sought for the erection of 6 floodlighting columns and 3 additional lamps to existing columns within the tennis club. So Ginsall Tennis Club is a well-established club, consists of 6 artificial grass courts, clubhouse and parking, located on a corner position fronting Gorse Hill to the north and Ginsall Close to the west. The A46 is beyond Avalon Way to the east. The nearest neighbour property is 175 Ginsall Close, which is just here, together with its associated curtilage. And that shares the southern boundary of the application site. So the aerial photograph shows the area in more detail and the relationship with the nearest neighbouring property. The application relates only to courts 2 and 3, which is shown edged in red here. There are 4 other courts within the club already, which already have the benefit of being floodlit, and those existing floodlights are unrestricted by planning conditions. The building with the white roof is the clubhouse, obviously the associated parking with access from Gorse Hill. This is a stitched-together image, which shows the full width of the site. This is taken from the corner of Ginsall Close. This is obviously the neighbouring property at 175 Ginsall Close. And again, a wide angle view and stitched together image of the tennis courts, which shows the relationship with 175 in more detail. And the existing floodlights can be seen on the courts beyond courts 3 and 2 to the back of the image. This is taken from Court 3 and shows the relationship again with 175 Ginsel Close and the bedroom window that serves that property, which obviously overlooks the tennis courts. The boundary is marked by a wire fence, and there are hedgerows to the rear boundary or the rear garden of that property. So the proposed site plan shows courts 1, 2 and 3. There are six new floodlight columns, which are this one here, 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 this one and this centrally located one here. And then there are three new lamps to be added to existing columns that currently serve court 1. So the red lamps are those to the perimeter, which would be fitted with baffle plates that shield the lamps to reduce the level of light overspill beyond the site boundaries. Members will see the conditions set out on page 38 of the report. Officers recommend that members include a further condition to ensure that the baffles are retained following implementation of the developments. So should members be minded to approve the application, I'll read out the following condition which is suggested. So the perimeter floodlights as shown on the approved drawing shall be fitted with 400mm baffle plates prior to the hereby approved lighting columns being brought into use. The lighting columns and baffle plates shall be retained thereafter and maintained at all times. So in terms of the lighting columns themselves, they will be 6 metres in height with a 0.7 metre swan neck arm to match the appearance of other existing floodlights on the other courts. And these are the lamps themselves with the types of baffles that would be on these lights, obviously, as I said, to shield overspill, to prevent overspill to neighbouring properties and beyond the site boundaries. This is the light spread plan that indicates the lux levels on the ground, which shows the brightest levels are largely contained within the courts, with some overspill beyond the site boundaries, including to the south within the neighbouring property at Ginsel Close, which you can see the boundary or the outline of here. So in terms of the key considerations, these are set out on pages 35 to 38 of the report. But in summary, it's considered that the principle of additional floodlighting to serve this existing sports facility is acceptable in principle, subject to other material considerations. So in terms of the character and appearance of the area, it's not considered that the presence of additional floodlight columns would cause harm given the existence of existing lighting columns within the site. And by virtue of the fact that the columns could be conditioned to be green in colour as set out in the recommendation. In terms of the lights, it did not consider that the area is one that is intrinsically dark by nature of street lights along Gorse Hill and the number of existing floodlights within the site, which can be used unrestricted. The additional floodlights as viewed from Gorse Hill or Ginsel Close would be seen in the context of the existing floodlights, and it's not considered that the additional lights proposed would cause harm to the character and appearance of the area during darker hours. In terms of residential amenity, the impact on the amenity of the occupiers of 175 Ginsel Close is a finely balanced consideration as set out on page 36 of the report. However, when taking into account the likely increased level of seasonal use, which could be restricted by suitably worded conditions, to include a restriction on the hours of use, timers to be fitted to the lights to prevent unnecessary use, and the additional condition requiring the baffles to be fitted and retained to perpetuity, it is considered that the impact on the occupiers of 175 Ginsel Close is not so significant to justify a refusal of planning permission in this case. It is also considered that there will be no harm to the safe operation of the highway, as the lighting levels fall within the scope of the Highway Authority's standing advice, and the baffles and time-restricted use would prevent harmful or excessive overspill of light to the surrounding area and would not therefore cause harm to ecology or biodiversity. The application is therefore recommended for approval as set out on pages 38 and 39 of the report, with the additional suggested condition requiring the baffles to be in place prior to the use of the lights commencing and retained thereafter. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hodgson, on behalf of Ginsall Tennis Club. Mr. Hodgson, do you want me to run again through the timing? You understand that's okay. So when you're ready, so when you're ready, please press the button and then start.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I speak to the meeting tonight in my capacity as chairman of Ginsall Lawn Tennis Club. The tennis club has occupied its current site for well over 50 years, and the management committee has worked hard to continually improve the facilities for its members. During my time on the committee, the last five of which have been as chairman, the club has always been conscious of the need to live happily alongside our neighbours, both the residential ones on Ginsall Close and the commercial ones on the Avalon Way Business Park. I believe we have done this, in particular with regards to our closest neighbours at 175 Ginsall Close, and am confident that if the current application were to be approved, with the conditions and safeguards included within it, we can continue to do this in the years ahead. If approved, the floodlighting of courts 2 and 3 would bring a number of advantages to the tennis club, the most obvious of which would be the increased opportunity for our members to play during the darker evenings of autumn and winter. With floodlighting on courts 2 and 3, the club's plan would be to convert court 4 from its current artificial grass surface to the same artificial clay surface on courts 5 and 6. I should point out at this point that I think the officer did say we have 6 artificial grass courts. We used to have, but 2 of them were converted to artificial clay 2-3 years ago now. So we now have 4 and 2. This would give the club 3 courts of each surface, and would be of great benefit for our match play in the Leicestershire Leagues, where 3 courts are ideally required. With all 6 courts having floodlights, it would also mean that 2 matches could be accommodated on the same evening, and with all pairs able to play on the same surface. It would also solve the problems encountered in the past, where, because of rain delays, some pairs had to switch surfaces to continue playing the match under floodlights. The other big advantage to the club would be the opportunity to expand its coaching programme, and in particular the junior coaching programme. Currently, with only 4 of the 6 courts having floodlights, there is a good deal of competition for court time between the coaching team and the ordinary members. Having all 6 courts floodlit would allow us to address this problem. I very much hope that the committee will approve the club's application. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I ask the ward councillor, Councillor Taylor.
I ask for this planning application to be brought before the Plans Committee due to the detrimental effect these floodlights will have on the residents of 175 Ginsall Close. The proposed sighting of the floodlights is on the boundary of the tennis club and 175 Ginsall Close. The proposal is to light 2 additional courts within a group of 3. I hope you've seen the photographs added to the planning portal by the residents of 175 Ginsall Court that shows the light pollution that already occurs into their garden from one lit court, and this is the court furthest away from their property. The report states that the new perimeter lights will feature baffles to prevent excess light spillage outside the courts. As you can see from that photo, a large amount of light already spills outside the court into 175's garden from one lit court. Light spillage into the rear amenity of the dwelling and into the 3 bedrooms of the dwelling is of concern to the occupants of 175 Ginsall Close. Charnwell's local plan core strategy policy CS2, high quality design, requires development to make a positive contribution to Charnwood, reinforcing a sense of place. Development should be respect and enhance the character of the area, having regard to scale, massing, height, landscape, layout, materials and access, and protect the amenities of people who live or work nearby. This proposal does not respect or enhance the character of the area. CS13, Biodiversity and Geodiversity, seeks to conserve the natural environment and expects development to take account of impacts on biodiversity. I do not see any evidence of that within this proposal. Policy CS15, Open Spaces, Sports and Recreation, seeks to support open space needs within the borough. As part of this, it supports development which contributes to sport and recreation provision. The tennis club is an existing sports facility in the borough and proposes that enhance the use and quality of such facilities offered support by this policy. This needs to be considered in the planning balance for the application. I think far too much weight has been given to this policy against weight given to the residents of 175 Dinsel Close and the enjoyment of their home. If this application is approved, not only will these residents have noise from the club 365 days a year, but also now 365 evenings a year, along with bright lights shining into the main rooms of their home and garden until 10 p.m. every evening. Within the officer's report, the proposal is stated to not have a significant detrimental impact to the amenities of neighbouring residential properties. I do struggle to understand this statement, as it is very clear this proposal will have an enormous future detrimental impact upon these residents, their property, the local environment and the night sky, plus Dinsel Close and Gorse Hill street scene. While I encourage sports and recreation and I also support this tennis club within Anstey, there needs to be a balance. In my opinion, this proposal is one step too far and has too great an impact on residents in the immediate area. National Planning Policy Framework, paragraph 180, states that new development should take into account the impacts of pollution on living conditions and the natural environment. Specific to lighting, this involves limiting the impact of light pollution from artificial light on local amenity, dark landscapes and ecology. I therefore ask the Planning Commission to give more weight to the detrimental effects on the residents of 175 Dinsel Close, rather than the ability of the tennis club to play tennis till 10 p.m. every evening. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much, Councillor. The officer... got Councillor Lowe.
Thank you, Chair. I've got concerns over this. I think the light pollution that's going to affect on 175 is going to be quite dreadful. I quite feel sorry for them. I've just got this feeling the tennis club has probably outgrown its base. But in saying that, could we restrict, if we were to agree this application, could we restrict the hours from, at the moment you've got 9 till 10, could that be 9 till 8? I just can't see it's fair on the residents of 175 to have this floodlight sat in their garden.
It's for members. If you think the application is going to have an unacceptable impact, that's a decision that members can make. As we said, it is a balanced decision, and it's about how members make that decision. What the guidance says on conditions is, if your concerns can be overcome by condition, then you should use conditions to do that. So if you think that by changing the hours proposed, it would change your, it would allow this development, in your opinion, to be acceptable, then that is definitely something that's in the gift of members here, providing you're satisfied that it meets the test, so it's necessary to overcome the objection and it's reasonable. Just as a word of caution, obviously that's not what the tennis club has asked for, and they could, if they didn't think or felt it meant their needs, either apply to vary that condition in the future or appeal it. But that shouldn't dissuade you. If you think it's unacceptable, then you've got two options, refusal or to vary the condition. But it's up to members to decide where they want to go.
Thank you for that answer. If I was to apply conditions to this in order for me to support it, it'd be a total waste of time than putting them lights up, because I wouldn't have them on a Sunday night and I wouldn't have them after 8 o'clock at night. They've got the other courts for that reason. I won't be able to support this application, and I will be looking or listening for other members for advice or something to say why we should be refusing this and going against officers' recommendation.
Councillor Tillett.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Lewis said much of what I was going to say, actually. I was going to say, could we limit it to 8 p.m. on this court? But also, can I ask through officers, is there a limitation on the times that their current floodlighting is limited to, or can they have them on all through the night, should they choose to?
Yes, thank you. Turn your mic off.
Oh, sorry.
As I said during the presentation, those the existing courts which benefit from floodlighting, the floodlighting is unrestricted in terms of planning conditions. So yeah, they are free to use the courts with lights to any extent they wish to. But obviously, there are other environmental health regimes which could be used. If it was a nuisance, say, for example. But no, there are no planning restrictions that prevent the use of the lights at the moment.
Thank you. I mean, I do feel for their neighbours, I really do. And this court is the one that is closest to them. And so is even with the baffles that it's proposed would be placed on the lights, I still think there is going to be spillage because they are going to be so close. The lights are going, for anyone who wasn't on the trip, the lights are closer to the bungalow next door than they are to the tennis court. So it really does worry me, and I'm not sure on balance that I can support the application.
Councillor Belton.
Thank you, Chair. I share the concerns of Councillor Lowe and Councillor Tillotson. And one thing that occurs to me is on page 39, condition 3, it talks about a time clock or similar device which will turn off the lighting after a period of no longer than 30 minutes of court inactivity. 30 minutes of inactivity is an awful lot. Why could we not, as Councillor Lowe says, reduce the opening hours, but also say that the time limit will be 10 minutes of court inactivity? Because if I'm living in that house and there are floodlights on and nobody's playing on the court, that's even worse in some ways.
Want to come back on any of that?
Yep, can do. So in terms of the condition 3, it was felt that 30 minutes of inactivity was reasonable to give the tennis club time to, say, for example, remove nets. Obviously, it's in members' gift if they wish to amend that condition to reduce that length of time. And also, Councillor Bolton, I'll just pick up on a point. You did mention reducing the opening hours. We can't, within the scope of this application, reduce the opening hours, but it would just be a condition that obviously limited the use of the lights. Thank you.
Right, we're in a bit of an impasse now. Have I got any proposals at all? Councillor Forrest?
Yes, Madam Chairman. I think this is a very difficult situation because we all want to see sports facilities in the borough, and this is a great scheme, and clay courts, you know, they might produce a champion that'll win the French Open, you know, but it's a hard call. So simply in order to try and move us a bit further forward, I'm going to propose that we refuse officer's recommendation.
I second that.
Do you have the grounds for refusal, please?
I mean it, sir.
Pardon?
I mean it, sir.
Amenity of...
the neighbours.
Okay. That's a good start. We need to just debate it a little bit more. So we need to establish what the harm is to that amenity. So obviously we spoke about light spill. But is it noise disturbance amenity? Is it just the light? You know, I need to know what you think is the harm so that we can, you know, you're explaining the reasons for your decision.
Councillor Forrest.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's the light spillage. I think it's the length of time that the lights are proposed to be on for. I think that is quite unacceptable. And I also think that they're, particularly on Court 3, next to the bungalow, there will be a great deal. There will be an unacceptable level of noise from that court. And we have to remember that someone is living in that bungalow, someone is living a life there, and they are entitled to the quiet enjoyment of their own home, as the old phrase was. And I think that this would take away considerably from the quiet enjoyment of their home.
If I could just clarify, so you're agreeing at the moment that obviously the current use of the lights of the courts are not impeded upon, so we're not saying they can't play on those courts, it's just being lit. So I'm just wanted to understand that.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Yes, I'm sorry. I'm standing up because I have to stand up from time to time. Yes, I don't want people not to play on these courts at all. I think it's an absolutely wonderful facility. But I think we have to be mindful of the neighbours. But some of those courts are already lit. I think it's C2, Court 2 and 1. It's the lighting of the extra courts that bothers me. I've already given my reasons for that. It's an excessive length of time for those lights to be on.
So it's just for the application we are looking at and nothing else?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Can I just confirm the lighting will be for Courts 3 and 2?
To any voting or anything. Councillor Snart, do you want it to make?
Madam Chairman, thank you. I think we've got to stress the light aspect to this, because in the summertime, there's no doubt that they would be able to play on it anyway. So I am concerned about the light spillage, and I think it's around amenity, and it would be good from officers to say, is this around policy CS2, or is it amenity that we can actually look at another policy to actually look at the amenity that's being harmful?
We'll just take a breather for a couple of minutes while the officers can check out what we can and cannot do. Okay?
Sorry, Chairman. Madam Chairman, I think I said CS2, but I think EV1 might be something we could consider.
For the sake of the microphone, we haven't all gone to sleep. We are just recording. We are just checking our facts at the moment.
I was just making sure that we were covering all the policies. Based on what you said, what policies you are referring to. So, Councillor Snart is right. It would be CS F2 and then EV1, which both talk about amenity to neighbouring properties and also national guidance. So the MPPF refers to protecting the amenity of existing and future occupiers.
Right, thank you very much. Now that that has been clarified, we have a proposer and a seconder to refuse this application on policies EV1 and C-2.
And the NPPF.
Could I see a show of hands, please? Any, no one against and one abstention. Thank you. And if I...
Yeah, to record the vote, that was 12 voting for the proposition and one abstention. Therefore, the application is refused.
Okay, we'll just let anybody who wants to leave, and then we'll move on to item 4 on page 41, please. Right. Is everybody ready? Mr. Reed, we'd like the officer will present.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. This application relates to 16 Oakland Avenue, Loughborough, which is a semi-detached house, and the application relates to a single-storey extension to the rear of the house. As is set out in the report, the house is one which is in multiple occupation. This is a lawful use, as was confirmed by the recent lawful development certificate, which was granted early this year, and again, as recorded in the committee report. Here's the location of the property, semi-detached house on a cul-de-sac. Here's an aerial view of the property. This is the front of the property, which I say is a hip-roofed, semi-detached house. And this is the rear of the property. And what is proposed is a single-storey lean-to extension across the whole of the rear of the property, extending out as far as the extension on the adjoining property. These are the existing floor plans and elevations. It's a conventionally designed semi-detached house, and because it's in multiple occupation, the room on the front on the ground floor at present is used as a bedroom with a communal living, sitting, kitchen area at the rear of the property. And on the first floor, there are three bedrooms and a bathroom. So what we have in terms of the lawful use of the property is a four-bedroomed property being occupied in multiple occupation. And what the application proposes is that on the rear of the property, there will be an extended living, dining, communal area to be used by the residents of the dwelling. Just for information, what this drawing also shows is that the hip roof would be turned into a gable end on the house, and that a room would be fitted into the roof space. As is set out in the report, that is permitted development and is not for consideration at this meeting, as that is something which can be carried out without the need for planning permission. But it's really there for information so that members understand what is happening to the dwelling. What is before members and what is being considered and is set out in the report is, in effect, a relatively modest extension to the rear of the property, a lean-to extension, similar to the one next door, except this one extends across the full width. The one next door doesn't extend across the full width of the property. And as the report explains, were it slightly lower and slightly shorter, it would actually be permitted development. So what we've got here in terms of the impact upon the design and impact on the amenities of neighbouring occupiers. Well, we have a house which is already in multiple occupation, and what is being proposed is a slightly enlarged shared kitchen and living area. The design, as we see here, is relatively modest. The blank side wall overlooks or looks towards the neighbouring property are on this side. It butts up to the extension next door. Therefore, there is a very limited impact upon the neighbours on either side of the property. Impact of the proposal on the street scene. It's a lean-to extension at the rear of the property. Therefore, it is not seen from the street. Car parking. The addition of a slightly larger kitchen living area doesn't increase parking demand from the property. No additional bedrooms or other schemes are being provided as part of this scheme. Therefore, the existing front of the property is hard surfaced for at least two cars. That is not changing, and this scheme doesn't put any additional demand upon car parking. Flood risk, and the property is in a flood zone 2, as is set out in the report and as is recommended in the report. The floor going through at the same level as the existing property imposes no greater risk for residents nor impedes the drainage of the local area. So in terms of flood risk, what is being proposed meets the standing advice of the Environment Agency. So the scheme is one of putting an extension onto rear of property which is in multiple occupation, and the recommendation is that planning permission should be granted.
Thank you very much. The board counter, Councillor Smedovich.
Right. The non-student residents living on Oaklands Avenue have written to express their concerns that the additional development of a property would be harmful to the residential character of the area and the living conditions of surrounding occupiers, and I support them. There are 32 properties in the avenue, 16 are HMOs, with at least 5 and 6 student occupants. That is a minimum of 80 transient students compared to 38 permanent residents, which includes children, in the remaining 16 houses. The potential increase in comings and goings to the property, when added to the 16 existing HMOs and other student accommodation on nearby Forest Road, would unacceptably add to the existing levels of noise, disturbance and inconvenience experienced by local residents, which would be detrimental to the living conditions of occupiers of neighbouring properties and the character of the area. It would be an over-intensive use in these particular surroundings. We know it's an HMO with the 3-6 designation, but that same regulation did not stipulate that extra rooms had to be built to accommodate additional occupants. We object to any additional rooms being built, as the cumulative effect together with the probability that the attic will be converted is more than likely. The effect on local parking arrangements, including highway safety, in this small cul-de-sac is already significant and we think severe. The angle of at least 4 of the driveways does not provide adequate space for 2 cars. None have a turning point, and vehicles parked in all the properties have to back out and attempt to turn on the street. Consequently, cars are left parked on the pavements on both sides. Many incidents of parking and obstruction have resulted in police involvement, including residents not being able to leave the avenue to travel to work. The situation is exacerbated by the HMO on the corner of Forest Road and Oaklands Road, where 5 cars park most days on the narrow pavement access to Oaklands. Children have to walk in the road, which is also used twice a day by parents dropping children off at the nearby school. I was asked recently to report this to the police again. I did so, and now a senior police officer has visited the area twice, day and night, and agrees there is a problem. The impact with the additional number of residents would tip the balance of the community even further. It's hardly sustainable now. I would suggest that it goes against paragraphs 123 and 130 of the National Planning Framework, which says that poor design, but which fails to take the opportunities available for improving the character and the quality of the area. Reports of noise and nuisance in the ward are not made to our environmental service, the reason being that Charnwood Borough staff do not come out in the middle of the night to deal with parties. Residents know that when they call security or the police, they will get action and then contact me the next day to keep a record. The most recent complaint was on the 16th of September this year, when two reports were made about noise from number 2 Oaklands at midnight and again at 3:30 a.m. Other antisocial complaints have ranged from a collapsing fence that I reported 3 times to the landlord who refused to mend it, a drug raid, and refuse lorries unable to access this road on numerous occasions. The street wardens and I have knocked on many doors on the road to advise and issue warning notices relating to bins and side waste. Adding to the deteriorating character of the cul-de-sac, gardens have been slabbed and the sewers no longer can cope with the water. I note the developer has commented on 2 properties that have attic conversions. They are not student properties. There is now an overabundance of student accommodation in Loughborough and hundreds more rooms available now in the purpose-built accommodation blocks. We now need to have homes that can revert to family use. The university is not expanding. They are not needed, and the residents have asked me to ask you to object to this application. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor. Mr.
Yes, just to reiterate a couple of points. I think, as I said at the outset, and I'd reiterate, this application is an application for a lean-to single-storey extension at the rear of an HMO. The HMO is lawful, as it's been considered by the local authority relatively recently. Therefore, the merits of the use of the HMO, an HMO policy, antisocial behaviour, parking, etc., are not matters for consideration in terms of this application. This application relates solely to a single-storey rear extension.
Thank you very much. Councillor Grimley.
Thank you, Chair. I was just going to pick up the point again, which Patrick has, the officer's just mentioned about this. This is already an HMO. It is frustrating as an HMO, but it is what it is. We can't change it. This application doesn't seek to change anything that's not already existing with regards to the use. Essentially, we are looking at a relatively small extension on the back of the house that would not be significantly different to what a permitted development could possibly have, maybe slightly smaller, which is what we are looking at. There doesn't appear to be noted in here significant detriments of the amenity of the adjoining owner, unless I've missed that, which the officer could perhaps clarify. So, being on sort of basis, I'm going to propose officer's recommendation.
Just to clarify, you're proposing acceptance of officer's recommendation, and you have 1 question for clarification to the officer. You asked for something to be clarified.
There was no.
You want to take that now?
Just to confirm that the key issue is the impact on residential amenities. As I explained, it's felt that there's no significant adverse impact upon neighbours in terms of the consideration of this extension, single-storey extension.
Thank you very much. Councillor Tillotson.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with everything that Councillor Smidovich has said, but sadly, it's already an HMO, and I don't believe that we've got any planning reasons for refusing, as it's not increasing the number of bedrooms in the property. We have undoubtedly failed the local community by not imposing restrictions on HMOs much sooner. If, as Councillor Smidovich has said, we've got 50% in this street, clearly way more than we would permit now, but we are where we are. I also believe we should be restricting the ability to park on the pavement, but that is also outside the remit of this committee. So with real, real regret, I will be supporting this application.
Thank you very much. Councillor Tassel?
Yes, I have to echo Councillor Tillotson's comments. It is difficult, but it is an HMO already, and it's got its licence and everything, so we can't do anything else other than agree with the officers.
Thank you very much. I don't want to prevent people speaking, but if it's just to reiterate what's already been said, then fine. But if you want more clarification or you're bringing something else to the discussion, that's another matter. So at the moment, I have three other speakers. Councillor Snart, did you want to add something or ask?
Not at all. I agree, and I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Ransom, did you have anything you wanted to add to the discussion?
Yes, Chair. Could we actually put a condition on the extension that it isn't converted into a bedroom? No. Is that you can't help me for trying, but yes, it is unfortunate. And can Mr. Reid actually clarify that this is actually definitely only going to be, is it a 3 or 4 bedroom, because not a 5, because the small bedroom has been halved?
I think Mr. Reid will explain, but I think it goes by the number of occupants that can use the building.
Just to say that the existing dwelling is a 4-bedroom. The proposals here show a 4-bedroom dwelling, but whatever the precise number of bedrooms or their size is, it's the lawful use that restricts the occupancy. So at present, it's an HMO with a lawful use of between 3 and 6 persons. So whatever the configuration is, there can be no more than 6 persons living there.
Councillor Lowe.
Thank you, Chair. I want to reiterate what everybody suggested, Chair.
Right.
You can't shut me up.
I can try.
Councillor Smith made comment that she would like to see the parking spaces put into gratuity. Can that be done, can I ask the officers?
You're only considering an extension, so the use is already gone, so... And the number of bedrooms isn't increasing, so it would be very, very difficult to say the demand on parking has increased, and therefore I don't see how it would meet the tests of being a condition.
Thank you very much, Councillor Lowe. Councillor Forrest.
Yes, if... Well, of course, I'm going to agree with Councillor Smidovich and Councillor Tillotson, because if I started on the subject of HMOs, we'd be here till midnight, so I won't. But I would like to refer the officers, please, to page 45. For care should be taken during site work to make sure that hours of operation, methods of work, dust and disposal of waste do not unduly disturb nearby residents. I don't think that's good enough. I want to put, unless there is something elsewhere that I haven't seen, but I would like no work to commence before 8 o'clock in the morning, after 5 o'clock at night, only on Saturday mornings, not Sundays and not bank holidays.
Thank you, Councillor.
I would... My professional advice is that you are straying into other remits of legislation there. They're covered under environmental health legislation, and I don't, to justify it, you would have to show why this development is so, would justify that when other developments that you permit don't, you know, and what the demand, what the why it's necessary to make this application acceptable in planning terms.
I don't believe it is exceptional in planning terms. We have done this before. There have been several occasions where we have said, because of amenity, privacy of neighbours, we have put restrictions on. I withdraw it then, and I will propose that we accept officer's recommendation. But I am not happy with that. I really am not.
Yeah, I mean, that's just my advice. It has already been proposed by Councillor Grimley anyway, the resolution.
If you, there's nothing to stop an amendment and a seconder, but we take the advice of the professional officers, but the decisions are by this committee. So at the moment, I have Councillor Snart that would like to come back. I'll come back to you, Councillor Forrest, to see if you do want to make an amendment to the proposal that we accept officers' recommendation subject to, and take it from there.
Thank you, Madam Chair.